Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Flashpoint. Where is going to be the spark that ignites the world? And it looks like they're over there in the corner striking the matches to find a good match. And they've already got a bonfire piled high as it could go. With me, of course, a regular guest, insider himself, Stephen Bannoun. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you, Bonnie. It is definitely a lot of matches are being struck right there in the Middle East. Not looking good at all.
I asked you before we started, do you think that we'll even make it through Shavuot, which is June 16, and you said...
No.
No. I mean, that's only a month away, folks. Okay, Stephen, I'm going to put myself on mute. We have been trying to get this show off the ground since Friday. Actually, Stephen was at a conference. I just got home right now. I haven't had dinner, and I cannot get my main computer to open Skype. So, if we can't, go through the door, we're going to go through the window. If not, we're going to dig under the fence. I'll put myself on mute, Stephen, and you do it.
You got it, Bonnie. Listen, this is really a serious situation, friends, and I wished it wasn't so serious. And I have been getting a lot of intel. I have my Israeli sources. I have Iranian sources, intel here in the United States. But specifically, coming from the Middle East, I've been getting some information that's very disturbing. Not only that, Yana brought me just a few moments ago a message that Steve Quayle had put out on Facebook. That wasn't good either. It was a military officer just came out of a briefing, and they're very concerned about the situation in Iran. And we're talking about in the military briefing that the United States does not have air superiority any longer. And how are they going to deal with casualties on the ground there because of not having the air superiority? In other words, no flying, medevacing out by flights as easily because they could be downed and killed that way as well. So this situation, Bonnie, is really bloated in the Middle East there. And I'm going to kind of go back a little bit because the last couple of days we've been doing the live broadcast there just quickly with our phone. From the conference up there in, and I always get it wrong, I don't know if I'm saying, I think it's Cincinnati, it's way down there on the left side of Ohio. We were there doing this conference on Planet X, and, and then these things started coming in. I was getting information from one of my good friends who used to live in Iran, and in fact, not too long ago, ended up having to move from Iran. And getting some very interesting information even before we saw the first attack on the oil tankers there in Saudi Arabia, actually the United Arab Emirates, I believe it was, where the oil tankers were, that there was the different factions of the Mujahideen, that organization that had been caught purchasing or trying to purchase the speedboats in order to weigh those things down with explosives and attack the interest of the U.S. in the Gulf there, in that Gulf region there by Iran, the Gulf of... let me just pull it up on the map for you guys, just for those of you that are watching by video feed, those of you that are listening to us here on Hebrew Nation Radio... I don't want to get any of my words wrong here, but it'd be good for regardless of who we're talking to right now tonight. But I want to give myself a bird's eye view there. The Persian Gulf is what I'm trying to say, but the Gulf of Oman is really what I'm thinking about at this point, because we know that in that region right there, Iran was talking about blocking that access, claiming its own territorial waters to stop the oil supply going through. Now, to kind of give you guys, to back up a little bit about what we had been sharing with you guys already, I was getting information from an Iranian source that I have that the Mujahideen, which is has been known as a terrorist organization, but yet they've worked very closely with President Bush and now even with President Trump's administration. And when we say that, that's Mariam Rajavi is the woman who is the head of this organization, the Mujahideen organization there, that has the ear and attention of Trump's administration about the overthrow of Iran. And I'm going to be going into that organization specifically. We're going to be talking tonight about who is funding this organization, not who's funding it, but as far as who that organization is funding. Let me clarify that there. But yet at the same time, I was being told that members of this organization here had been arrested in both Europe and in Kuwait trying to purchase the vessels that they wanted to use to put explosives on and then blame it on the Iranian government and attack U.S. interests there in the Gulf. Now, that's what we saw go on. We saw that there were oil tankers that were struck. Mainstream media reported only two.
Now, this group that is trying to purchase the mines or explosive devices, what group was that again? That's not Iranian?
They are an Iranian group. They call them Mujahideen. But these are the people, Bonnie, that have been working we're going back all the way to the 70s. They've been a faction, I think, since 1979 that was created to overthrow the Iranian regime, the current regime under the Ayatollah. And they've been involved in all types of wars, including Afghanistan, to try to defeat the Russians. They've always ran a secret base inside of Iraq. And in fact, they were the very ones that were brought into Iraq, were trained militarily in order to overthrow the Iranian government, but they failed in doing so. The source that I had said that this group here I'll put it like this here. Stevie says, the Iranian people don't like the Iranian government. He said, but they actually hate the Mujahideen more than they do the Iranian government itself. And of course, as we get into the broadcast, Bonnie, we'll find out exactly why, and I can understand why this is. But these guys have been backed by the U.S., and I've actually even got a link where the Mossad has backed them. And, of course, trying to topple, destabilize Iran and completely overthrow it. They haven't been successful yet. But it's not just been Iran. They've also worked with ISIS in the wars going on in the Middle East right now, whether it be Iraq, Syria, and they have been heavily involved in Afghanistan. Of course, that's going back to the late 70s there to push back when Russia was fighting in Afghanistan.
Are the Mujahideen kind of like the CIA-banked Iranian ISIS?
That's a good way to put it. In fact, parts of their members of their group are ISIS members. They are the I guess you would call it the caliphate. They are supporters of the ISIS militants. So I'm like in the beginning stages of trying to unravel all this information. It's so deep and so complex. He's had to send me information, and it's dangerous to send this type of information, mind you, but he sent me information to try to make sure I really understand and know where to look for the information so I better understand the organization itself.
Is it possible that this actually is, when I say U.S., I mean, it's not the people, but it's the globalists who have commandeered our government? I mean, you know, the people don't like the government. I mean, wow. I mean, their name is Legion. The name of that is Legion. It's the globalists who have taken over they have seized the wealth of America to achieve their own globalist goals, and they themselves are trying to foment this war so they can bring about the final cataclysm that their god, Satan, can then take rule of the earth. Is it possible that they're using U.S. funds and this is actually U.S. backed?
Well, this is what's kind of strange about this group here. And I want to read to you part, and I can't show this information on the screen, but I can read to you guys some of the information that's shared with me, so we can understand about the group a little bit better. And I've actually got a video up, which I will read the subtitles on this in just a moment. But in 2003, Ayad Alawi had the ears of the Bush administration. This is the letter that was sent to me. He told them the whole Iraq can't wait for the Americans, and what happened, happened. In other words, Ayad Alawi was the mind that the mastermind that helped overthrow the Iraqi government, and of course supplying false intel that the Iraqi government had weapons of mass destruction. Now, oddly enough, though, Bonnie, Mossad was heavily involved in that as well, because we know that Prime Minister Netanyahu back then said that they had the evidence that the Iraqi government had the yellow cake. We sent CIA operatives in there. They made a movie about it. In fact, they had the yellow cake, which was never true. It was all fabricated information. We toppled the nation on false pretense. But he goes on to say, Maryam Rajavi has the ears of the Trump administration. Pompeo and Giuliani and Bolton all have been receiving money from Mujahideen according to their tax returns for the speeches they held in a camp Ashraf in Iraq, as well as in there in Paris. That really caught me off guard, but it is true. I've been digging and I have been finding the evidence. And yes, former New York Mayor Giuliani is involved with this group, was paid as much as $20,000 speaking fee to go to their camp, the Ashraf in Iraq. And this camp is a noted cult, sex cult, perverted camp. And of course, this is also where they trained their fighters to overthrow the Iranian government. And when I was looking at this, one of the things I did, because I was told that if you look up the Ashraf camp in Iraq, I was told in the letter here that, Steve, you'll find there's a lot of information out there. Well, I've got this one video up right here. And I'm just going to read the subtitles. I won't have the volume on, but just so people can get an idea of what's going on. In the picture, for those of you that are listening here on Hebrew Nation Radio, if you can see the picture here, Mossad Rajavi, he is the leader of the Mujahideen group at that time. He's standing there at the platform, and he is about to address the fighters after their failed coup of the Iranian regime. And he's going to blame them when they were fighting. This was including both men and women, that they had their minds on their wives and on their husbands, which, by the way, all their marriages were rearranged and forced marriages. And in this documentary that speaks about this, the women have come out that were able to escape this and have spoken publicly about the humiliation they went through as being a part of this. So here's what he actually says here. He says to them, everyone must know well, hang on one second here. I'm going to put a tiny, tiny volume in there. Must know well, and your sisters, and you sisters, asked around hundreds. He goes on, am I right, Maryam? Now, by the way, Maryam is his wife. Maryam Rajavi is the very one right now, and she's sitting there on the platform just to his left side. She is his wife. She was actually married to another man, but because of the failed coup, she was taken away from her husband and now was marrying the leader himself. All right. So he's getting her to acknowledge history. He says, those who were in Operation Eternal Light in person and listen to them, continuing on, let's remove all the obstacles in the way, he says. This is a lesson of union and unity. It was a very difficult process for me, as it was a mental torture for me. Now, this is one of the women that are speaking out about that afterwards. Now, what she's going to say, and I won't play anymore, I'll just kind of give you a little, so we could see and hear a little bit of his voice there and what he's saying. What he did after this failed event, he blamed the failure on the fighters because they were worried about their loved ones back home. Now, anybody's worried about their loved ones in a case of wartime. Americans are as well. So he blamed it on them. So what this cult leader does, this terrorist leader, forcibly breaks up the families. He tells the mothers, you will hate your children now, breaks up the children, breaks up the marriages, and totally separates them and has them marry in amongst other men in the group there. And these mothers have to leave their children and everything behind. So they've done this documentary to point this out. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on that, but it's just to kind of show you just how sinister this group is. And that very camp where this was going on, what ended up happening there is that this is the camp where John Bolton himself has gone and spoke publicly and is paid by this organization. And the information is available on the internet to be able to see that. And even as my source says, you can look at his tax returns and see that they're being paid for the speeches that they held in the camp of Ashraf in Iraq. He says the relationship between them, this is the source that I have here, this sending this, the Mayadeen goes back 20 years. People in Iran don't like their government but hate the Mujahideen because they helped Iraq during the Iran-Iraq war. And that's what he says about them. Now, I've got several letters here, and we're going to go into more of this because now we're going to go back, Bonnie, and we need to focus on what's really going on and what has actually happened here in the region there of Iran, Saudi Arabia, the Persian Gulf, the Gulf of Oman, and of course right now we're seeing in the news that the Yemenite Houthis are the ones they're blaming right now for the latest attacks that have taken place in that region there. And of course the latest attack, there's a third one already now. Let me just bring that up real quick too. There's a third attack that happened earlier that is in a place called Tabriz, the oil facility. And it says was was due to a cyber attack. If true, then it is response to the Houthis drone attack at Aramco oil pump stations in Saudi Arabia. Now that is supposedly a retaliatory attack against Iran's oil supply. It's really getting strange, Bonnie, because what they're doing is they're attacking each other's oil supply to try to stop them from being able to get the oil out of these countries here, which is going to gravely affect the United States. But what we had happen was Iran is indirectly blamed for the attack on the oil tankers, as well as the attack on the drone attack on one of the facilities there. I'm going to actually pull from the source information that I was given on this as well. Let me make sure I get the right letter here before I do that there. What we're looking at here is USA airstrike, okay, attacks. Before I read the letter, let me kind of go into this here. When I first was getting the information that was shared with me with my Iranian source, all the information I shared thus far was correct. The Mujahideen were the ones that had got caught trying to purchase these boats to use them against U.S. assets in the region. Specifically, they were talking about ramming U.S. military ships there and setting off these explosives to draw the U.S. into a war with Iran. Now, of course, as I mentioned already in our broadcast before, the Mujahideen were backed by the U.S., as we can even see with the Trump administration. But then I was corrected on one issue from the source that I have there in Iran. He said the actual attack on the oil tankers and then the drone attack on the oil pipeline was actually done by the Iranian government itself and not the Mujahideen. That's what caught me off guard. I want to read to you directly what he says to me here in this letter that I just got last night. He says, 2009, at the height of the tensions between the U.S. and Iran, it came to a point that the U.S. airstrike attack seemed imminent. The leaders of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, in their interviews, tried to sound confident, but you could feel a sense of resignation and hopelessness in their statements. He goes on, this time around, they're nothing but confident. I believe what played down in Syria, where the U.S. was using the best Arab fighters seasoned from the Afghan war, combined with U.S. reconnaissance weaponry, air support, and by the way, this is what really gets me right here, ISIS and al-Nusra. He's actually telling me, even in the letter here, that the United States, when they were fighting with their seasoned trained fighters from the Afghan war, was using the best of the U.S. had, including the U.S. reconnaissance weaponry, air support, and ISIS fighters and al-Nusra fighters. You know, I've always said, guys, this is something, Bonnie, and I've said it, you know, we've said it on Hebrew Nation Radio as well, that unfortunately, kind of like no mystery when it comes to maybe al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, we know that even Israel has openly admitted supporting al-Qaeda because they said they want to overthrow President Bashar al-Assad. They figure he's the big bad boogeyman in the Middle East and they got to overthrow him. But this was the first time that I had intelligent sources sharing with me that the U.S. is using ISIS fighters in this battle. He goes on, though, to say, and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard came out on top is the reason for their self-belief. All right, now let me kind of clarify this before I read on. What he's saying here in the letter, in 2009, when we've nearly come to blows with Iran there, Iran was trying to sound confident, but they weren't. They didn't have any kind of real true backing. They had not really been in any conflict directly or indirectly with the U.S., so they were only sounding tough. Now he's telling me because they have been able to defeat a U.S.-backed military operation, that not only the U.S., but you have the Saudis, you have the Turks, all trying to overthrow the Syrian government, that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard has sent in support, manpower into Syria to stop Bashar al-Assad from being overthrown, and they actually won the war in there. And it's been conceded that they've won. Now, of course, the fight's all starting back up, and he says that this is what gives them the courage to feel like that they can, now they can stand up against the U.S. Here's what he goes on to say, though. He says, I believe Iran has just showed a bit of what it can do. The drones penetrated 1,050 kilometers into Saudi Arabia, hit 7 spots. They hit the stations. They showed they can close Bab al-Mandab, and they don't need to close the Strait of Hormuz to do it. That is provocative. He said these two events, the tankers, drones, was not a gasket flag, but Iran's first response to America. Then he wrote on here as well, Pompeo went to Europe to calm them down because they know about the Mujahideen are trying to start a war to give America the alibi it needs to start the war itself. In other words, to give the Americans the excuse to go to war with Iran. And he knew the Mujahideen were doing this, that they were already trying to incite the violence there. And as a result of what they were doing, which, by the way, that's This arrest in Kuwait and the arrest in Europe, if I understand right, those two arrests is what caused the U.S. to move assets, their own fleets there, Abraham Lincoln, the USS Abraham Lincoln, to the region. And then, of course, Iran gets bold after the U.S. shows their military might. And he says Iran is the one that hit the tankers and sent the drone in as well, showing that we can shut down you economically with the oil by what we're doing here. Now,
Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome back to the second half, folks. And we are in the middle of, my goodness, the Flashpoint is just about to be lighted up.
Hey, let my English major say
that. And, you know, it means that our salvation is drawing nigh. So, you know, yes. Read for the last couple of days, two different people who ostensibly hear from the Lord. One is Glenda Lomax, the other is Jeff Byerly, with very detailed, and they agree on this, that even though what they post, they don't say they talk to each other, but Trump has had DNA and enhancement. And this was a year ago, April, when we bombed Syria over the fake sarin gas attack, allegedly by Assad on his own people. But at that moment, at that month, and that I think is why he has changed. There's no wall now. He's not interested in defending the independent press. And he goes after these globalists. He supports these globalist plans of, you know, invading or causing big trouble for Venezuela. Just allowing the globalists. And now I'm wondering if we don't see that in the Middle East, even with what we're seeing there.
I can believe that, Bonnie. This is alarming.
Yes.
It's an alarming situation.
Yes, and, yes. Especially since Russia, you know, they took the opportunity to display and show everyone their Poseidon drone, underwater drone, that is capable of, it will evade all of our defenses because we don't have an underwater defense, and it is capable of producing a 1,500 foot tsunami. So, Stephen, you go ahead. I'll mute myself.
You don't have to mute yourself, Bonnie. So, but anyway, yeah, it's a very serious situation going on. And as you mentioned, the Gulf of Hormuz and also the Persian Gulf there, and that little bitty strait right there. And of course, you guys that can see it via the watching on Israeli News Live, you know, you got that little horseshoe, so to speak, there right by Dubai. Iran right across the straits there, and it's not a wide place either. You know, you're talking about a very narrow body of water. Looks like it's about 20 miles wide at the narrowest point, which, I mean, this probably would seem pretty big, but it's not that big in terms of if you're trying to defend the area. Anyway, as we were saying on the earlier broadcast, Bonnie, the first half, when we were talking about these things, we were getting into the fact that the U.S. military is going to be moving more military assets into the region there, and that's being reported on a lot of different outlets. ABC News, their website, .com, the latest U.S. ready to ship military assets in the Middle East. And I'm right now hoping that while we're on the broadcast to get an ETA on that movement of troops there. And, you know, in fact, the president actually talked about sending 150,000 troops into the region. Now, I don't think this is what they're talking about in moving all the assets here. Let me share with you, though, from a good friend that I have in Israel, who sent me some information about this as well. And before I even read this information, let me just really encourage you, all of our listeners, both here, Israeli News Live, Hebrew Nation Radio here on Flashpoint. If there's ever a time you wanted to pray for Israelis, their safety, this is the time and hour. I don't appreciate myself personally what Prime Minister Netanyahu has been doing, the United States has been doing, NATO's been doing, that is just escalating this entire Middle East situation. But at the same time, I realize too that when we get involved in a war like this, like in the Iraq war, that's American citizens that are putting their lives on the line that will die as a result. not to mention the innocent civilians that are being killed in these wars. But it's also in this war here, there's going to be a lot of Israeli citizens that will die as a result of this. And so my heart really goes out. And what I'm about to read to you might really come home a little bit more when I share this with you. And this is a portion of the letter that was shared with me here. It said, important government meetings says that Israel and the USA are very concerned about the economic blowback of war with Iran. All right, now I'm going to pause for a second. And of course, as I read to you on the letter from my Iranian source, it was Iran directly that struck the Saudi Arabian targets. And by the way, I want to clarify something, because I know that when I covered this originally, I said 7 oil tankers had been struck. And I know that Paul Bagley also had mentioned the same thing. I think he said as many as 9. When it came out in mainstream media, they said 2, and everybody said, oh, it's like fake news. This source here from the region says the drones penetrated 1,050 kilometers into Saudi Arabia and hit 7 spots. These 2 events, and then he says, tankers, drones, was not a gasket flag, but Iran's first response to America. Now, from what I'm reading from my friend in Israel, this is exactly, they got the message, because he says here, Israel and the USA are very concerned about economic blowback of war with Iran. Why? They see that Iran is going to target what hurts us most, the oil supply. You remember Saddam Hussein did the same thing. He set all of his oil fields aflame. Well, we could tolerate that, but our main supplier for the United States has always been Saudi Arabia. Russia is one of the largest oil producers as well, and so is Iran. But if we make them the enemy and they take out the economic backbone of America, it's going to bring our economy to a halt. Now watch what else he says. The thought is at this time to prepare for that and a possible economic depression. Buy food, gas, and water, and meds. Now for here in Israel, the public is being told nothing here on this.
They want us to die. They want 90% of us to die. They want a world cataclysm. And the only question is, who is going to rule the final global empire? Well, who's going to rule?
Exactly, Bonnie. But isn't that
horrible?
This is an Israeli saying that the public is being told nothing here on this. In other words, when it comes to the Israeli citizens, they're not being told to prepare, buy gas, water, and food, and put stuff in your shelters and stuff. They're just going to be left out to die.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Which
you have said, Netanyahu wants that in his own country, and surely the globalists, I mean, their number one aim is to eradicate the United States so they can rule the world. They say, we can't rule the world while the U.S. is, so they have to defeat us. So if Iran, if they get into they're transnationalists, they're globalists, they don't have any nationalist, you know, love for any country that they're in. Certainly not America, certainly not. Hey, you guys are going down. We have our bunkers. We're going to pop up like gophers afterwards. And, we're going to rule the world.
That's it, Bonnie. And, you know, I'm going to read one more sentence he says on here. Just out of this very in-depth information. He says, the public is being told nothing here on this. It is thought that when more assets, Abe Lincoln, get in place... That's kind of like using code words, so it's not picked up in the email very well. When Abe Lincoln gets in place, he said, there will be attacks on Iran and its navy. So I guess they're looking at trying to do a crippling blow.
How long before Abraham Lincoln is in place?
Well, that's what we're waiting for now. We have another source with
that's
that intel.
That's
so,
the waited for email or
yes,
text.
Yes, yes. So yeah, we're waiting right now for a confirmation of when that gets in place. Now, let me kind of take you guys to a few more things here as well. I want to show something to you. Now, we were talking about the Mujahideen, and this is the part of the Iranians that are trying to overthrow the Iranian government. And from what I was being told, they're really the ones that started this. Now, he did kind of seem to clarify that with me. My Iranian contact seemed to clarify that with me, that the Mujahideen, and I don't know if I pronounced pronounce this name correctly, but I hope I do. I think that is the right way to pronounce it. And the specific branch of what they call the MEK of the Mujahideen, this group here created this situation because they were purchasing the vessels to strike American interest in the region. And so therefore, the United States sent in its military power as a result of that. Well, then the U.S. military, just kind of recapping this so people really follow this, the U.S. military then sends in our ships, the USS Abraham Lincoln, into the region there. And next thing you know, now it's no longer the Mujahideen. Now the Iranians decide to show America, if you're going to mess with us, we will strike you where it hurts most. All right, but I want to show you, though, this is from an article. I'm going to read a little short portion here from Israel National News, Arut Sheva, very orthodox right-wing paper in Israel. They did an in-depth article about this Mujahideen group, and this is coming back from 2017, in July of 2017. It says here, according to Human Rights Watch, which interviewed several former MEK members, which is the Mujahideen group, the organization is a cult that has kept its members virtually imprisoned and in a compound in Iraq and controlled them psychologically. They eliminated anyone who expressed their intent to leave. A RAND report commissioned by the US DOD found that the MEK is a cult that utilizes mind control and practices mandatory divorce, celibacy, authoritarian control, forced labor, sleep deprivation, physical abuse, and confiscation of assets. The FBI reported the MEK, MLA, National Liberty Army fighters are separated from their children who are sent to Europe and brought up an MEK-supported network. These children are then returned to the NLA to be used as fighters upon coming of age. All right, that's just a little bit about what the Israelis say about this group. And yet at the same time, we see people like former Mayor Rudy Giuliani in an article here on Politico.com says took money from a group that killed Americans. Does Trump care? Well, does Trump know? I mean, look, I'm not trying to take up for President Trump, but also sometimes I wonder if he even knows what's going on, right? So Rudy Giuliani's taking money from this very group that even the Israelis consider a terrorist organization, manipulative organization, right? And now here's what's really strange. We get this in 2017 that Israel's writing about it. And by the way, the Arut Sheva is very pro-Netanyahu organization, pro-Orthodox Jewish organization. But now here is a clip here from Fox News. And with Fox News, Miriam, let me pull her name up so I don't mispronounce it. Rajavi, she's the one that has the Trump administration's ear now. And in that interview right there, Miriam Rajavi is going on there talking about that the Trump administration, they got to take down Iran. That's an interview with Fox News. I'll just give you the date on it, October 13th, 2017. Right about the time that Israel's writing about how horrible this group is, and even all the way up until recently in news on Fox, etc., this woman is brought out as if she's some kind of great saint or something, right? And I'll just, I won't play it for right now, but, you know, so you can just see her picture there, those of you watching on Israeli News Live there, so you know what we're talking about here. And yet Israel considers them a terrorist group. All right, now, let me move on to another issue here. Here you go, John Bolton, right here. You can see in the picture here, this is on one of the Twitter images that I pulled up. She's right there meeting John Bolton and, of course, other senators, congressmen there. In fact, the one congressman, I forget his name, but I know he was on Israeli News Live that's standing on the stage there. But this lady here, John Bolton, also had been paid, I think, like $20,000 a pop speaking at their very camp where they do all these deeds that the Israeli newspaper Arut Sheva spoke about, where they do the mind control, manipulation, forced divorces. John Bolton was speaking at their very compound in Iraq and getting paid for it. I wonder why these guys sing their praises. Now, but this is something, though, that I found that was very interesting. Because you have Arut Sheva saying how evil this group is, but I want to show you a connection that the New Yorker brought out. And Bonnie, this will get you really to thinking. This article here in the New Yorker, let me just real quick, we'll pull up the date on this so people know the date. This was on April 5th, 2012, all right? Read a little section of this only. It said, a terrorist organization by the State Department in 2002, the MEK, which is the Mujahideen Terrorist Organization, organization earned some international credibility by publicly revealing accurately that Iran had begun enriching uranium at a secret underground location. Mohammad al-Baradi, who at the time was the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the United Nations Nuclear Monitoring Agency, told me later that he had been informed that the information was supplied by the Mossad. So he goes on and says, the MEKs...
There you have it.
Yeah, the MEKs...
There you have it.
Right, with Western intelligence deepen after the fall of the Iraqi regime in 2003. So now we know who's working with these guys.
Yep.
Now
it's, sometimes I think, you know, the voters are just the audience. I mean, they're the audience and we're just watching a play. And here comes the, you know, the Russian character. Here comes the USA character, you know. It's all just, I mean, it might have been, you know, an opera written by Mozart if it weren't so, I mean.
Right. That's right, Bonnie. But, you know, here's
real and happening in front of us.
Here's one nice thing I could say about this, though, and this is what I guess we really have got to look at as well. If you go back to the article here on Arut Sheva and how they really expose this organization, and this is what I always say, this is under an article entitled U.S. Betrayal at the Highest Level, all right? Because according to the Israeli article on Arut Sheva, written by Amil Imani on July 7th, 2017, about this organization, this shows you that there are genuine, true Israelis that want to know the truth and will publish the truth. But undoubtedly, Mr. Imani had no idea that the Mossad was involved in helping this organization, only saw that the United States was in behind this organization. He even puts on here, the invitees, in this article that Arut Sheva wrote, writing more about it, says, a few years ago, several high-ranking American and European officials and dignitaries attended the NCRI, the National Council of Resistance in Iran, rally held in Paris. The invitees included M.G. Paul Valley, U.S. Army retired, former ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former Speaker of House Newt Gingrich, and several others. The participants gathered in a conference room supposedly to support Iranian opposition groups. And he mentions it right here. The NCIR is not representative of an opposition group. In fact, the NCIR is an offshoot of the MEK, the Mujahideen Khalik is the actual name for that MEK organization, a devout Islamist Marxist entity known for their ISIS-style terrorism. Now, that just gives you another link, Bonnie, right there. These guys are linked to ISIS. And my very, what did I read to you earlier, guys, when I read to you the intelligence source that I have from the Iranian source, that he speaks about this group and he says U.S. reconnaissance weaponry, and he's talking about how that they got emboldened because they were defeating the U.S., who, and he says in here that the U.S. was using ISIS and al-Nusra. And even right here in the very article where the Arut Sheva says the group there is an ISIS-style, now they says style terrorism, so they're not identifying them exactly as ISIS, but according to the Iranian source that I do have, which, by the way, again, I will say this, my Iranian source does not care for the regime of Iran, all right? But as he said, Iranians dislike this group even more. And in fact, their members hate their own group because of what they've done to these people. Kill them if they try to leave, torture them, all kinds of evils. But we're seeing more and more now proofs and links of cooperation with the ISIS militants, terrorist organization. But as I say again, though, Bonnie, and I just want to make sure I stress this, this shows there's some really good Israelis, which we know that anyway. I mean, God has...
He's got a remnant.
This country. Yes, he's got a remnant in Israel. And I don't know how much time we have left, Bonnie, but I've got some amazing stuff
for
you.
About 6 minutes.
Okay, let's hit Syria now. More intel coming out of Syria. We have another issue coming up.
Said almost salaciously.
Yes.
But I'm interrupting, sorry.
No, you're quite all right. This is exciting here. Yes, I've got some very interesting information coming up about Syria, and I think the article here on the Jerusalem Post really kind of helps encapsulate what I'm going to talk about. This article came out today, I believe it. Well, yeah, it came out today. It is, the title of the article is Syrian opposition leader urges normalization with Israel. Fahad al-Masri is his name. He has been living in France for the last 24 years, and he is talking about having normal relationships with Israel. So, as I have been told thus far, and it's not to say, but the source I do have on this believes that this could be another Juan Guaido type scenario. Now, that's an opinion, but I can see why he is saying this to me, because this is exactly what Israel and the United States would like to see happen. They want, and I have been told, they're going to take down Damascus. It is coming. And with the situation happening right now with Iran, I can see why Damascus will be hit. And so one thing I wanted to share, though, Bonnie, though, that is such an amazing thing about this. I don't have to go so much into the war aspects of this. We know what can happen. Damascus, scripture says, will be a ruinous heap. And I literally got a revelation on that very passage while I was sitting in an interview with Pastor Paul Begley on his program that he has on LaSalle Broadcasting. I think it's DirecTV. I forget the channel that's on, but it's going to be airing here in the near future. Right in the middle of the broadcast, and I even said it, as I'm getting the revelation, even now as I'm speaking, I was reading from the scripture of Isaiah 17, Damascus becomes a ruinous heap, and I'll pull that up so we can read that, so everyone can, we can make sure we get this just right when we speak about this there. But and so many of us know, we know the prophecy. I've spoken about this many times here on Hebrew Nation Radio as well, and how that God holds accountable Israel, but not, as I always bring out, it's not specifically the state of Israel, because when we see that the burden of Damascus, to behold Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. When you get down to verse 10, though, we find out that God says there, for you have forgotten the God of your salvation, and you are not mindful of the rock of thy stronghold. Jesus Christ, Yeshua HaMashiach, is the rock to the Christians. And he specifically mentions Israel in here, the children of Israel, forsaken from before the children of Israel, which represents 12 tribes, not just three. So it's not just the house of Israel or the house of Judah that is now home in the promised land, but the remnants of the children of Israel that are all over the face of the earth, whether it's NATO, whether it's the United States. But I think, Bonnie, it's not only that, it even includes Russia, because there are members of the lost tribes of Israel in Russia as well. So collectively, because of all the wars that are going on here in the Middle East, this brings about the demise of Damascus. This is what takes away the stronghold of it says here, verse 3, for the fortress also shall cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom from Damascus, which Damascus had become a fortress to Ephraim, which are the original believing house of Israel that accepted the words of Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and where one of the largest, or the oldest, I should say, the oldest Christians on the planet are from Damascus. In other words, they have been there for the last 2,000 years. Now, here's the revelation I got. I'm sitting there talking about this, and it came to me. Suddenly, Saul, when he was not Paul yet, he was on his road to Damascus to do what? To bring in bondage to back to Jerusalem all those believers living in Damascus. And the Holy Spirit revealed to me, had it not been that Christ stopped him, this passage would never be fulfilled in the future. If he had wiped out the believers in Damascus at that time there, we would have no believers today, where the fortress of Ephraim would cease. So Syria had to be a fortress to those believers all the way up into the modern days here, and this is where it will come to an end, and they will end up like the children of Israel, and they would be as part of the diaspora, which we've already seen that the Syrians are just like Israel when they went into exile. They've also, many of them are in exile, but it's not over yet, and it's fixing to get worse. It's fixing to get much worse, guys. So we really need to pray for Christians in the Middle East. Pray for our brothers and sisters in Israel as well, because a war is coming, and a lot more innocent people are going to die. And I'm afraid, Bonnie, it is at the door. And you mentioned, we have the feast coming up.
Shavuot.
And
Pentecost for everybody else.
Yes, it could be before then. It might be after then. From what we're looking at, Bonnie, it's just a matter of when those assets are in place. And even then, we don't know if it'll happen right then and there. That's always the way we do. We'll never do it right then and there.